Ratko Mladic was arrested yesterday. He's been on the run for nearly 16 years. He is the man allegedly responsible for genocide, war crimes, crimes against humanity. That was all done during his role as Army Chief of Staff during the Balkan Wars. And at this point, we're hearing the voices of survivors of the massacre in Srebrenica. Here's Mevludin Oric. He was among those who were led to their death. He survived, though. He spoke to the BBC 5 years ago. But here's the thing. Many of these survivors spoke to the BBC on the condition that the interview would only be broadcast after Ratko Mladic was arrested. So we have voiced over his answers. And this is in some ways, some intense tape.
They said, get out and stand in a line. They were shouting. I grabbed my cousin Harris's hand. He said, they'll kill us. And I said, they won't. Then I heard gunshots and I fell to the ground.
And Harris was dead.
Yes, he was dead. With difficulty, I managed to move him from on top of me. I was locked, stuck under him.
8,000 men and boys were Muslim men and boys were executed by Mladic's soldiers. With us right now is Dejan Anastasijevic, a political journalist with the weekly journal Vreme in Belgrade, and he also writes for Time magazine. Good morning, Dejan.
Good morning.
This, for many people in the United States, we're trying to put it in context to help people understand how important the capture of Ratko Mladic is. And to me, it seems like it's a fair comparison to compare the capture of Mladic with the capture of Osama bin Laden. Would you say that's fair?
Well, you can push this analogy only so far. I mean, both Osama and Mladic share one thing in common, and they're responsible for the deaths of many innocent people. But beyond that, I think it's a different situation. The biggest difference, obviously, that Mladic was acting as a state player, essentially, a soldier, the commander, the chief of staff of the Bosnian Serb army, who also was simultaneously working for Belgrade general staff. So he was a state player, unlike Osama
bin Laden, who was killed in a raid in Pakistan. I want you to take a listen. This is actually the voice of the general here, General Mladic, in July of 1995. This is out of the archives of the BBC, and he's sending orders by radio to a local commander near Sarajevo during the siege.
General Mladic here. Shell the presidency and the parliament. Shoot at slow intervals till I order you to stop.
Understood.
Target Muslim neighborhoods. Not many Serbs live there.
Yes.
Shell them till they are on the edge of madness.
Dejan Anastasijevic, listening to that, it's difficult to see him just as a soldier acting for his country.
He was acting according to the policy of Slobodan Milosevic and Radovan Karadžić at that time. And by the way, this tape is not from 1995, it's from 1992. I recognize it. It's from the very beginning of the war, the start of the shelling of Sarajevo. What I'm saying is you cannot just say that he was a terrorist. He's an indicted war criminal, and who was one of the most serious player in a very serious war.
That's Dejan Anastasijevic, a political journalist, writes for Time magazine as well as a weekly journal in Belgrade. Also on the line with us, Denisa Kostovičova, I hope I pronounced that properly, Balkans expert, yes. Senior lecturer at the LSE, which is the government there. I'm wondering not to push the comparison to obviously a terrorist and somebody leading an army, but psychically, doctor, do you think that for the people of Europe and especially for the people of Bosnia and Serbia, this capture closes a book for them? Is it some kind of closure?
I think it's a closure in one respect, in that it almost complete. There is one war crime suspect at large of those who were indicted by the tribunal in The Hague. But obviously the process of reckoning with the past has to continue because for the simple fact of so many people that were involved. So this will require a larger societal process in the Balkans.
We have these recordings of survivors of the massacre in Srebrenica, and they were given to the BBC on condition that they only be released after Mladic's arrest. What's the difference there? Why would survivors only want their stories to be told after Mladic was in custody?
I think I can only speculate on this. One possible rationale for this might be if these are witness statements and testimonies, that if there was a network that was protecting, that they felt threatened by it. But that's a pure, I must say, a speculation. I think it's important that this event actually brings out these testimonies and that the victims and people who have suffered get a voice.
Well, clearly the people of Europe and especially of Bosnia and Serbia are going to be possibly hearing some difficult and in some cases horrifying testimony. Maybe these will be they'll be hearing stories that they have never heard before that went on both in Sarajevo and Srebrenica. I mean, this could bring up some emotions that have not been even thought of for 15 years.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think from the perspective of coming to terms with the crimes, and especially for coming to terms with the crimes committed in the name of one's nation, the testimonies of witnesses are very important. They are very powerful, and they actually are very effective in dealing with some narratives of the denials of the crimes that are still pervaded by some sections of the extreme sort of nationalist wing in Serbia.
All right, that is Dr. Denise Kostovikova, a Balkans expert, and with the government at the LSE. We also spoke to Dejan Anastasijavić, a political journalist there in Belgrade. Thanks to both of you.
It's really difficult to describe how I feel. We watched as men and boys had their throats cut all around us. Women were raped here. Over two nights, people committed suicide watching what was happening. They took my husband to that building over there. My son wanted to escape, but he never appeared again.